Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That welcome was from our founder, Brian Brown. You're listening to The Brown Briefly. It's Tuesday, May 11th, 2021. And this morning we have five Brieflies gathered by the magic of Zoom to discuss local, state, and national news and, of course, nonsense. Welcome, Lynn Kerrigan, Kevin Jones, Truman O'Brien, Gail Kellner. I'm Bruce Holman, your host for this week's program. I trust you all had a wonderful Mother's Day weekend and celebrated appropriately with your mothers here and departed. Any Brieflies have any special memories from this week's Mother's Day? Some of you are actually mothers, I understand.
A couple of them might have
been. I went up to Maine.
The proper use of the term mother, right?
That's right. Yeah. I went up to Bainbridge and got to stay with my daughter and her two kids, my crazy grandkids, Jack and Sam, and Dan, her husband, and his parents, Galina and Boris, who were respectively from the Ukraine and Moscow. So it's always a very interesting time. We made some Pinterest fad of tulip deviled eggs with spring onions as stems, and you know, that required quite a few margaritas. Had a lovely time.
That sounds like a wonderful Mother's Day. Gail, how about you?
It was lovely. I celebrated via a Zoom call with my one son, who doesn't live on the island yet, but is en route. And then my son, Jordan, who does live here, he and I went out rowing. So that was my special request. So, you know, imagine the water was so clear. You could see down to the bottom and the sound of the oars. And we rowed out to check on the blue martins that the Audubon Society has put out nesting boxes for them. Oh, a couple dozen years ago now, I think. And anyway, we went to see if they were occupied yet. So we saw a few blue martins out around the pilings. So that was great.
So the boxes are mounted on the pilings off of the Sylvan Beach dock?
Right. Yeah. After, you know, the Virginia Five and the Mosquito Fleet had their heyday, the docks went into somewhat disrepair. The community maintained them for a number of years. In my childhood, I remember still being able to walk out on them. And I have wonderful pictures from the days when the Virginia Five used to come, and my grandfather would ride to work in Seattle in the morning and back in the late afternoon on the Virginia Five. But once the docks no longer had the planking on top of them, the pilings remained upright. My understanding is that many of the pilings have been taken down because of environmental concerns with creosote that was initially used to preserve them. But the birds love them. Cormorants, the osprey, the blue herons, seagulls, and then a few years back, the Audubon Society put up these they're nesting boxes for blue martins, which is like very similar, maybe even in the same family as a swallow. And they nest in the boxes out there. So the pilings get to stay, at least for now.
Yeah, it's interesting that the process of taking the pilings out has been done on the east side of Maury and Quartermaster Harbor in the very south end of Vachon, because that's the Maury Marine Aquatic Zone.
Right.
And there's a proposal in front of the Department of Ecology now to make all of Cobos Passage a marine zone, and also Tramp Harbor. Those are in process. So at some point, all of those pilings may come out. I have mixed feelings about that as a historian, because those pilings are they give you a real sense of the past and what was there at one point. But at the same time, there are ecological concerns too.
When I look out at them, you know, they remind me of music notes somehow, especially if there's got a, some of them are tied with a crossbar along the top. And then of course, over time they go missing. And so it, you know, the melody has changed.
They're an art project.
Right. Sorry, Lynn. Hey, those were purple martins, right, Gail?
I believe that's correct.
Yeah, there's quite a colony of them in Ladysmith, British Columbia, which is a fantastic spot. They have the nest boxes right on the dock, and we have an upper deck on our boat. So we, as the tide rises, we sit up on the upper deck, and the bird boxes come into view, and then the tide goes down, and away they go. But yeah, it's always a pleasure to see the purple martins in Ladysmith.
Wonderful.
Lynn?
I was just saying that the piers on Tramp Harbor, I love them too, Bruce, because they are art installations. You know, on Vashon, people will fill them up with odd things like the heads of, you know, pumpkins. So they'll all be dressed up at the same time, or all of a sudden the cormorants will be laid out there, or herons, you know, among them. So there's double the shadows, you know. It's quite the event to watch over the seasons. It's lovely.
It is.
I keep thinking, I couldn't help but think, Kevin, while you were sharing your story about the baby birds coming into view, but that from their perspective, it must be pretty interesting to see these humans kind of rising up into looking into their houses.
Here they come again.
Yeah, and I can tell you that you know, you don't want to get too close. I mean, they really, you know, get nervous when something as large as a human is, you know, at their same level of their house. But we try to be respectful, but also it's great to see them. You know, and you see them come back with whatever bugs they were able to catch, and then all the chirping of babies inside the nest box. You know, it's really great.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like you'll be going up to Ladysmith anytime soon, Kevin. I'm afraid the border is still closed and doesn't look like it's going to open this summer.
I know.
Yeah, I haven't been as bold as, you know, to go research what the quarantine requirements are for going into Canada. I've heard that you can actually get into Canada, but you have to go through some procedures. But good, all good things in due time.
Yeah, our executive director is there right now, and I think she had to quarantine for like 2 weeks after she got there. So,
I was speaking last night with a friend who is a Canadian, and he was telling me that they are aiming a little different strategy than we are, trying to get everyone a single shot instead of the two shot system. And they've been a little bit, they're a little bit behind, and their numbers are soaring in places. And in part, I asked him what he thought was going on. He said, I think the Canadians are too polite. First, on one hand, you know, they're like, well, wear a mask, but only if you want to. We don't want to inconvenience anybody. Secondly, they didn't like get right in line. They're fairly dependent on pharmaceuticals produced in other countries, and so they didn't get right in line to get the vaccines. And so they're hoping, as the United States has extra, they'll flow over the border.
Lynn?
Yeah, I have a really good friend, my friend Joe Hoskins, who's a Gaelic singer along with me in that Shedham band in Seattle. The choir and band that, you know, is full of Scottish and Irish lassies. And she says that the issue was that competitive line that they had to jump into in Canada because they didn't get any of the nation-produced vaccines like we got, and they didn't control the international supply. They just said they had to compete with everybody else in the world in these, you know, fewly available vaccine. So, you know, I think that's what's still happening all over the world. You know, half of Africa can't get vaccines. It's a dilemma. I mean, I'm glad to have mine, so I won't speak more about it, or I feel too hypocritical.
Although it does, look like, it does look like the U.S. is going to have a fairly sizable surplus as they hit the sort of the COVID deniers and people who don't want the vaccine. So already there's places in the U.S. that they're going to use. So hopefully there's a mechanism to get them to Canada and other places in the world. Yeah, Kevin.
You know, I was texting today, and it's always intriguing to see what kind of feedback you get from a texting campaign, and your skin has to be somewhat thick because some of the replies are not things you'd want to repeat to your mother. But yeah, one person insisted that in Virginia, the pandemic is gone. And it's like, really? And so I said, here's the latest stats, right?
Okay.
Yeah, but in Virginia, our numbers are the lowest in the country. And I said, okay, well, that's awesome. But yeah, it's really intriguing, you know, to see how different people are reacting to different ways.
Yeah, very much
I'm beginning to think you can't tell anymore what people are serious about and what they're saying to punk everybody else or to flip the facts around just because they can. You know, you hardly know how to take anything anymore.
Yeah, good point.
It is a shifting landscape, that's for sure. So have any of you guys been uptown Vashon recently to see how Vashon's beginning to open up after the long winter shutdown?
It's coming alive.
Is this appropriate? Is it worrisome? What do the Briefleys think about what's happening on Vashon?
Well, I was up. I like to make a sojourn up to the farmer's market every week, and I was to get my greens and I saw it again. Town was bustling, and honestly, I really enjoyed seeing everybody out and about. Most people were still wearing masks, you know, when they were out in public, but at distances, you could see that people were taking them off as well, and maybe not as many people wearing them in cars and things like that. So it seems to me that Vashon in general is still being careful, but wonderful to see things beginning to open up.
You know, I went up to the transfer station.
Yeah, I've eaten
the other
gravy
day.
Twice.
Oh, sorry, Lynn. I went up to the transfer station the other day, and I went through and I got the little card, you know, to pay for the yard waste that I was hauling up there. And as I got to pull into the place to unload the truck, it was like, oh, I wasn't even wearing my mask. Oh, my goodness, what happened? when I went through the booth. On the way out, I was, of course.
Yeah, it feels weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sort of a whole anti, you know, we've been culturally indoctrinated now that masks are so critical. And it's kind of weird now to think about not having one on and interacting with another human.
Yeah, I was at the sort of little sidewalk bistro tables of Gravy twice this last week, enjoying some of their food market type food being open. And the same with Ruby Brink. Two of my favorite restaurants here, not that I don't have a few more, but I really like it that so many places have expanded to having kind of preserved and fresh or fresh cooked food available for takeout so that you can sit there outside. And I like to think I'm fairly safe sitting out on the sidewalk, but the masks do go up and down, you know, as people pass by little narrow sidewalks. But I don't know. I feel like I'm needing to take more risk, but still trying to stay safe as best I can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't say though, Bruce, you know, I haven't experienced a Vashon traffic jam in a year and a half.
Yeah.
You know, the rush hour back and forth to the ferries have been less. I don't even know if the ferries in the North End are still on a two-boat schedule. So that's
yes, they got bounced back. They're going to change sometime in June, they say.
Okay, go from two to three boats
in
sometime
May.
In June.
Yeah.
Okay.
My wife calls it the Vashon Rush Minute. Instead of rush hours, the rush minute. So.
The only real traffic jam I've ever seen on Vashon was back when we would caucus, and and it was held at the schools, and so the corner there by the Minglement and the Coffee Roastery and now the Art Center. That you couldn't get anywhere. It was hilarious. And all Democratic caucus. There you have it.
There it is.
Of course, yes. The times have changed, but.
Well, that and Chris Anderson's coupe. I guess they're trying to figure out how to reopen the coupe, which for any folk musicians, meaning acoustic musicians on the island, you know that that's been a gathering place for musicians in that tiki garage for many, many years. He's a wonderful host and has several bands in there, plus big crowds, and they live down this tiny little gravel road off a tiny little gravel road. And the same thing, you always knew when their parties were happening because it was a jam up down on the gravel roads.
Mm-hmm.
I've been really enjoying getting, you know, out and about. I got to go see the Mukai Haiku Festival, which was just lovely. You know, the front garden kind of full of calligraphy poetry. It was inspiring. And this entire front lawn of the South home and garden was full of young poets haiku, which was so sweet. You know, I think my eyes were in tears about half the time. One of them was kind of grumpy, you know, how many more syllables do I have to put on here? Something like that was his poem.
That's cute.
So I'd like to start the conversation today by asking Lynn Kerrigan, former Georgia Peach poet, provocateur, musician, feminist, and fighter for justice. Do you have a Mukai haiku to share with us this morning?
Well, I think I read them last week, but I kind of capitalized on one set of it because I had written a verse that I liked, and I just sort of did more with it. Mm. So on the off chance that anybody has any minor memory of anything I said last week, which is so narcissistic, you know, to even imagine. Anyway, what I had written was cherry blossoms speak pink words of patience and hope as they drift through time, which is very kind of typical haiku, you know, very uplifting and not my style at all. I just don't usually write like that, but I kind of got, I've got all ADHD on the idea of it. And
the haiku spirit embodied you and took over, right?
Yeah, well, I don't know what I'll call it. You can decide what you want about all that, but now I'm looking through my notebook and I don't know quite where they all are. So I will read you the other thing that I wrote this week, which was to my daughter. And it was, you know, how assemblies are like a pride of lions or murder of crows. So I wrote this poem for my daughter for Mother's Day called A Quiver of Sons. She has two that are 6 and 8. Their bodies thrum with anticipation, purpose. Soon they launch skyward, fletched from bird wing ash, their ancestors hammered steel. They were born to rise. Guide them to the bow, pull back, aim for the future, and gently release. Now see, that's the problem with poetry for me. I like a good motivating kind of poem, but I left all the part about where they whack you in the head with a ping pong paddle because they get so excited they can't see straight and don't know where their paddle's going. And I left out the part where they don't warn me about the dog poop in the yard until I'm on it. Thank you, I found it. Yeah. You know, they don't tell me about the urine in the corner of the perfectly groomed bocce ball court.
There you go.
They just shake their heads. I tell you, children are strange. So I really like to write, but it's like most language, which even though poetry is supposed to be a deeper kind of communication, for me, I find it the tip of the iceberg, and most of my fun comes after the poem is read, you know, where I roll my eyes and think, oh, yeah. And my grandson, who wanted to go to Joshua Tree, leapt in my arms and wouldn't come out of them when he wanted to know what a snake hole was. And I told him.
Well, now I want to know what a snake hole is.
Well, have you ever walked along and there's, you know, your foot goes down a little bit in a hole?
Yeah.
I mean, there's all kind of things. It can be scorpions and moles. But I told him, watch out for rattlesnakes. That was the last time he walked. They just leap up.
Yeah, I have those in my yard in Bashan, but I think it's moles.
Yeah.
Right.
They hope they're moles.
Not many rattlesnakes.
Yeah, this is like Ireland. We don't really have snakes on Bashan, do we?
Yeah.
Not we real do. Ones.
Yeah, oh, garter
snakes.
Yeah. Northwest. Garters.
Yeah, Northwest garter snake.
Yeah, we have a lot of them.
I did. I saw one yesterday, actually, and then it was surprised me. I haven't seen a snake for so long, but yeah, there it was running off through the lawn.
Yeah, they here in Ellisport, they love the bank because it's south-facing. It gets sun all day long, and so we have colonies of Northwest garter snakes, and they're really neat to watch. They're amazing, and to try and catch them, they're not easy to catch. You know, they move quickly. And then when you do catch them, they are incredibly strong. It's amazing. They're all muscle.
My grandmother used to pay us 5 cents for the little ones and a nickel or and a dime for the big ones, catching them. Now, we never hurt them. We just took them down to the neighbor's house. And
yeah, let them go without telling them.
Right. I'm actually very fond of the garter snakes, and had an unusual experience last summer where there was one coiled on my cement path in the sun. It was very large. And so I sat and watched it for a few minutes and it wasn't moving. I was really curious. So I got very close and it allowed me to reach down and I just stroked it with a single finger and it didn't move or run off. So I'm not sure whether it was very old or possibly sick. It wasn't there, you know, a half an hour later when I went back to check on it. Maybe it's like, hey, this is not a petting zoo, but yeah. I actually love them. I just love them. They're a sign of health in the environment. It means that they're slugs, which they like to eat. Mm-hmm. It means that they're an important part of our ecosystem here.
They are. Mm-hmm.
I got ruined of snakes, I have to tell you, as a camp counselor in a Girl Scout camp in North Georgia, in which we had to clean out a lake from canoes that had lots of milfoil in it and snakes falling off every forkful of milfoil, running over our feet as we left our tents to go out at night. Just no.
We'll just start calling it little Bashan. We'll start calling Bashan Little Ireland.
Little Ireland. That's right. So that's my portion, Bruce. Snakes and 10 nice grandchildren.
So bring in the Northwest Bashan Island perspective this morning from the Sylvan Beach side of Bashan. This futurist, writer, dream catcher, and peripatetic poet Gail Kellner. Gail, do you have a haiku for us? And what insights do you have about Bashan this week?
Well, you know, one of the things that I held my own little haiku festival in my yard. I have a beautiful flowering cherry tree. So friends and I got together and sipped tea one evening and wrote haikus and hung them around the trees and in the garden. So that was very
I love it.
And but one of the things that I've been noticing, you know, we've had quite a fall in the insect population in the Northwest and worldwide, as it turns out, something that scientists, are tracking and trying to get a hold of. So I was, an understanding of it is likely related to climate change. And it, of course, affects our bird populations as well. So I was very happy to see the mayflies come out this last week. I don't know if any of you had swarms of mayflies. So I did a little did a little research, as I'm wont to do, and they are that species of mayflies who are so interesting because they can live anywhere in their adult and final stage of flight, anywhere from like only 2 hours to maybe 2 days, so depending on which particular species. And I just thought that they're so interesting, but they're 100 million years older than the dinosaurs. So they have been around a long time. And was one of those, I love to see those long turns of history that predates humans. So made me happy to see them. And I'm chatting a lot, but in thinking about that, I found a poem, one of my favorites by Mary Oliver, that I thought I would read for us. And it's called The Summer Day. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean, the one who has flung herself out of the grass, the one who is eating sugar out of my hand, who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she shifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. She snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I have been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life?
Very nice.
That's a Mary Oliver.
That's my favorite last line in all of history.
One of mine too. Yes, totally love that one.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for sharing that, Gail. Mm-hmm. So, welcome to Kevin Jones, Vashon's own superhero of activism at the helm of Indivisible Vashon. I was in Vashon Town Saturday morning when a caravan of honking cars and trucks paraded through Main Street. What was that all about, Kevin? And what have you and your gang of merry activists been paying attention to this week?
Awesome. Bruce, I'm glad you brought the John Lewis motorcade topic up today. That was actually initiated by Molly on Vashon Island. And Molly reached out to several friends and Suzanne Greenberg, who's been a roving Brown Briefly reporter for a moment a few years ago, took up the torch and invited folks from different communities. And so it's basically a awareness raising campaign about the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, which passed the U.S. House and is now Bill S-4 in the Senate. And given all of the news that we're hearing about voter suppression, the John Lewis Voting Rights Act is a pretty important piece of legislation that we'd really like to have passed in the country.
And
woohoo! I saw that parade too. It was grand. And it just kept coming. I think that there were some cars that had, you know, intermingled regular traffic with the parade. So it went on and on. It was wonderful.
Well, you know, there were cars, there were bicycles. I'm not sure if there were walkers, but it was pretty much, you know, if you were there for democracy, show up and wave a sign and make some noise. So yeah.
And Sounds Bruce, like you're a probably flash ask jam.
Absolutely. You know, those are sort of pop-up occurrences on Vashon. It's always great to sort of drop in. Bruce, you're probably going to ask what is in the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. And it turns out that what it would do is restore something called preclearance, which was removed in Shelby County in Shelby versus Holder, which basically preclearance is if a state is going to make significant changes to their voting processes, there's a review process that they go through to assure that those changes reduce the likelihood of voter suppression. And of course, the concern is once the Shelby versus Holder gutted key provisions of the Voting Rights Act, which was passed many years ago, states stepped in and worked hard so that people found it harder to vote. But basically, if communities, if they're going to change election practices in diverse areas, diverse communities, change of documents required, if access is reduced to the polls based on language, or changing polling locations, those are all things that that pre-clearance would help to mitigate. So we look forward to the Senate doing its job and hopefully getting that bill passed.
And how is it faring in the Senate?
I believe that the markups are happening this week. I haven't heard any particular feedback, but I think that if I recall the right thread here, the committee that's working on it is bipartisan and equally balanced between Democrats and Republicans. So we expect a lot of jostling back and forth between the two halves of the aisle in Congress. But I don't have any specific news on that.
Great. Thanks. Thanks for that update.
Thank you so much for bringing that forward. Is that moving along right now, or is that stalled? Is there another time the legislature up there is going to meet, or are they still there?
Well, let's see. We're talking, in Congress this week. My understanding is the markups for the bill. And so that's where they're debating and taking, looking at different amendments that are being proposed by the Republicans and the Democrats. Frankly, right now, the filibuster is, like many things, is likely to stop progress on S4, as well as stopping progress on For the People. So it turns out at noon today, there's another meeting with Senate staffers. Actually, this is a meeting with Representative Jayapal's staffers and Congressman Smith's staffers. And we always ask them their views of what's happening in the world of the filibuster. Senator Cantwell did come out with a statement on the filibuster. She said that she still supports the talking filibuster, just like she did in 2012. And we're all kind of wondering, she hasn't changed her position in a decade, but things have changed around her. So we're going to be meeting with her on the 14th at a town hall this Friday at noon, and asking her her views on the filibuster. So a lot of moving parts that are out there.
Yeah, thanks, wow. Kevin. Thanks for the update. So I'd like to thank Truman O'Brien, who is at the controls this morning in the Voice of Vashon studio, drawing on his skills as a former airline pilot to direct us through these 45-minute discussions every week. Truman, you've become a prolific haikuist.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
If that's a proper word. I'm not sure it is, but yes. So anything you've been working on this week?
Well, actually, yeah, I did write a little haiku since I got your note saying that you were going to ask us to read our latest haiku. So I had to write one. But before I read that, I need to tell you that what I've been doing the last 2 days is yesterday there was a crew from Portland outside of Portland, Lake Oswego, that belongs to a company called Lightspeed. And this company produces aviation active noise canceling headsets and some other pilot supplies. And they also have both a blog and a YouTube channel where they cover things about general aviation. In particular, they talk about safety and some of the things that people can learn from various incidents around the country. And of course, ours was one of them, our airplane crash that happened on March 29th. So they came out and videotaped us for their YouTube channel. And we spent all day at it. They interviewed Craig and me, of course, and then they also interviewed some of our friends and then our wives and families about what was going on and how they responded to it. And it was, they were really a professional group, and we had a great time. And then we had them here in the studio this morning when Molly and I did our morning scramble.
Uh-oh.
And so I got to interview them.
How fun is that?
It was real fun and really a nice bunch of folks. And like I say, very, very professional. But we were out at the airport, And it was a beautiful day yesterday, I'm sure you all know. And we did all of our taping outside. And so sitting there, the this haiku came to me this morning. So if you're ready, here we go. Dip, dive, swoop, and chirp. Fresh mown grass on a sunny day. The swallows return. There's my haiku.
Mm-hmm. They've returned to my garage roof. I can tell you that.
Oh,
they've
boy,
got
they
a
do.
Nest
they,
already.
They do in big time. Big time.
Bugs. Yeah, it's awesome. Those mayflies don't have a chance on our place.
Well, as soon as we open the
Truman, would you?
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask you to read it again.
Oh,
it had right. such beautiful rhythm. I wanted to hear it again.
Okay. All right. Here we go.
Please.
Dip, dive, swoop, and chirp. Fresh mown grass on a sunny day, the swallows return. So, and that's what it was like. We were sitting out there, and as soon as we opened the hangar door, the swallows came popping inside the hangar going, oh, is there a great place in here? And we went, ah, out. Yeah. We don't want you inside the hangar. Sorry. But, So Susan McCabe, you know, is getting ready for her show here coming up in about 20 minutes or so. And she indicates that she has a haiku. Mm-hmm. So, Susan, you want to give us your haiku?
Oh, step in, Sus.
I rewrote one that I wrote a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Well, I rewrote what I remembered of it. So here it is: stone deaf, scruffy fur. The sniffer, runs her show. Lucy still can strut.
I love it. That's your old dog, right?
That's my old dog, yeah.
Oh, that's very nice. Very nice. Thank you, Susan.
Thanks, Susan. So, Susan, what's on your show today?
I have Joe Okimoto, who is on the board of Mukai Farm and Gardens, and he's going to talk about the Day of Exile, which is scheduled for a ceremony at Mukai Farm and Gardens on May 16th, the day that it actually happened in 1942 when 111 Vashon Japanese American residents were basically imprisoned, swept out of their lives and taken away to prisons. So he's going to give us some inside look at the impact of that on folks' lives.
Wow.
Sure. Well, and Joe's very interesting because he was 3 years old when he was put in a concentration camp in Arizona from Southern California. So he is a camp survivor and so has his own interesting story about as a little kid being in one of the American concentration camps. So Joe's a fantastic guy. So you'll have a good time with him, Susan.
Good inside information. Thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Great. Yeah. So I'm Bruce Holman, and I'm a historian on the island, and just wanted to mention that the Heritage Museum has a exhibit opening up because of COVID times. This is an exhibit that was going to open a year ago, but we've sort of delayed it, and now it's going to be a rolling opening over the summer. It's called Natural Wonder, an island shaped by water. So it's about Vashon, the natural history of Vashon, plants, animals, geology, you know, everything natural about the island. And part of it is going to be a very special in July and August. We're going to have an installation in the back of the museum called The Whale People, which is a collaboration between the Lummi tribe and the Puyallup tribe and a number of other Northwest tribal organizations to celebrate the orcas and to celebrate the whale people of the Salish Sea. And so this is an interactive multimedia kind of installation that will be in the back of the museum. The centerpiece of it in the center of the display space will be a 10-foot orca totem pole. And then on Saturday, July 10th, there'll actually be a 24-foot orca pole that's beginning its journey from Lummi Island back to Washington, D.C. to be installed at the Museum of Native American at the Smithsonian. So we're going to have a very special time. It'll be up through July and into late August. So it'll be up for basically about a month and a half at the Heritage Museum. So very exciting stuff for us to do.
And where's that totem pole coming from?
It's carved by a group of Lummi Indians. So from Lummi Island, Lummi tribe up near Bellingham, just off of Bellingham. But it's really representative of all of the whale people of the Salish Sea. Gail.
Oh, I just wanted to add, I love to hear the languaging of the whale people. And that's one of the subtle differences between European heritage and native populations in all over the North America, and that they saw other beings as people, full beings in and of themselves, not things but people. So the trees were the tree people, and the plants, you know, were variations of plant people, and just a very different understanding of the world. And that has such a rolling influence on how we treat things, you know, and how we respect or disrespect them. You know, when we objectify things down to being lumber or resources, you know, or something to be harvested, I think that we diminish them. And I love to hear that new language or reemerging.
Sure. Yeah, that sense of...
I think this is really powerful.
The sense of the natural world is sentient and being, you know, having a consciousness and having a presence equal to the presence of human beings is interesting and fascinating. And for the Puget Sound, I mean, the whale, the killer whales are actually the story keepers in the Puget Sound. Mm. So, and at the south end of Vashon Island, actually south end of Maury Island, right around from Manzanita, was what was called Mother Killer Whale Rock. So actually the mother of killer whales, the rock was at the south end of Maury Island, blown up as a navigation hazard by early European settlers. But the idea is that there were lots of orcas around Vashon, and orcas would use the beach there at the south end of Maury Island to rub off barnacles and that kind of stuff. And once the rock was blown up, orcas never come into Quartermaster Harbor again. So it's very interesting sort of sense of how we relate to the natural world. And this exhibit that will be opening over the summer in phases into the fall, when we'll have a formal sort of interior opening, assuming everything goes copacetic with COVID, is really a celebration of the natural history of Vashon Island. So it'll be very, very fascinating.
Gee, Bruce, that's so elegant. And I will just add one thing. It also makes me think about use or the naming of things, not just for their utility, but for their natures. You know, it makes us think of our natures. It's a beautiful story. I look forward to the exhibit.
I have to tell you one quick thing about naming. On this date in 1792, the Columbia River was named by, I'm sorry, I just lost his name. But anyway, the captain of the ship.
Pardon? Captain Gray. Captain Gray.
That's the one, yes.
Gray's Harbor name.
Gray's Harbor, exactly. On this date, 1792. So there you go.
Yep. And we're coming up at the end of this month on the naming of Vashon Island by... George Vancouver. And sometime at the end of the May, we don't know the exact date, but the naming of Maury Island by Charles Wilkes and the American Exploring Expedition. So a very auspicious time in the Pacific Northwest, because this was the time when some of the very early European voyagers were coming into Puget Sound. So May, June, and July, a lot of names were designated by Europeans.
Okay, guys, we are out of time. So we